Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hi, I'm Chelsea Clinton, and this season on In Fact, we're celebrating Women's History Month. I'll be talking with trailblazing women at the top of their fields about their personal journeys, the progress women have made, and how far we still have to go. Today, we're talking about women in business with Char Dubey. She's the CEO of Match Group, which owns and operates some of the world's most popular and profitable online dating companies, including Tinder, Match, OkCupid, and Hinge. Full disclosure, I came to know Char because I'm on the board of IAC, which owns a majority stake in Match Group. Back in 1963, Katharine Graham became the first woman to lead a Fortune 500 company. But since then, the number of women in charge of major companies hasn't exactly skyrocketed. In fact, far from it. In the Fortune 1000, where the Match Group falls, only 7% of CEOs are women. And the percent of female CEOs of color, like Char, only 1%. And yet, as you may have heard, study after study shows that companies with women in leadership roles are more profitable than those led solely by men. So why aren't there more women? And what or who is holding women back? Char has a unique vantage point on all this, and she's used to being one of the only women in the room. She studied engineering at the Indian Institute of Technology, and received a master's in engineering from Ohio State. Since joining the Match Group in 2006, she's held a number of leadership positions, including COO and president of Tinder, and she became CEO of Match Group in March 2020. Yes, March 2020. That means she took the helm of a major company whose product was dating just as the pandemic was starting. And while many CEOs have kept quiet on social justice issues, Char has been unafraid to speak out, including an opposition to the new anti-woman, anti-abortion law in Texas, where Match Group is based, and in support of Congress reauthorizing the Violence Against Women Act. Well, Char, thank you so much for being part of this podcast series. And I have been fortunate to know you now for a number of years and believe that many people listening to us may not know that apps that are part of their maybe daily life, but, you know, at least probably weekly or monthly life are part of a company, Match, that's helmed by a woman, by you. And so I thought we could just start kind of at the beginning. When did you know you were interested in science and in engineering?
I'm so excited to be here. It's the first time I'm doing a podcast, so hopefully we'll get this right.
I'm your first podcast?
You are my first podcast.
I feel very honored. Thank you.
I grew up in a small town in the northeastern part of India, and my dad was a professor of mechanical engineering, so I grew up on the campus of an engineering school. And that's sort of what exposed me to science and technology at the time, which was a different sort of technology because this is 70s and 80s. The internet hadn't come around yet, let alone smartphones and apps, right? And I was certainly exposed to engineering. I think the appeal for it was more the fact that very few girls were doing it. It was a field that was dominated by boys and men.
So that was an appeal, that wasn't daunting to you?
That's exactly right. I wanted to show that I could do something that was not expected of me. And so I think that was the appeal. I applied to one of the top engineering schools in India called the IIT. It's sort of the MIT. This was in the late 80s. So I found myself being the only girl in most of my classes in engineering school. And looking back at that experience, I think a lot of those 4 years is what shaped who I ended up becoming as an adult and a leader.
And when you were in your engineering classes and you were one of a few or the only girl, were you ever intimidated or did you just continue to feel like I have to prove what I can do and what girls can do?
I think I went in with a lot more confidence than I should have. And the first few weeks were challenging. I found myself in these classes with 80 to 100 boys and nobody wanted to sit next to me. My lab partner wouldn't come do his lab. And I think it was...
But he took credit for your work, I'm sure.
Yes. And so I did actually, believe it or not, think about quitting for about the first time and only time in my life. And there was a girl who was a few years senior to me. She told me, she said, if you're going to quit, who is that going to hurt? You're the one that's going to lose. And so grit it up. And I did. And I ended up becoming really good friends with most of my classmates afterwards.
And how do you think that set of experiences of being one of the few women, of having to continually prove yourself to your classmates, probably to your faculty, how do you think that has shaped you as a leader today?
You know, there's a few things that I think it taught me. One, how to navigate a world that was different looking, and most people didn't expect me to be there. And I had to figure out how to stand out enough. I was standing out visually anyways, but how do I minimize that visual standout and prove that I deserved to be there? And I think those were skills that sort of came into play even after I came to this country and my first job in this country, where I was the first woman engineer they ever hired and the first foreigner. I was the first person they did the H-1B processing for. And it was an aerospace engine manufacturing company in rural Pennsylvania. So I would say a culture shock both for me and for everybody there. But I think my experience at IIT certainly gave me the confidence to be able to navigate that.
And how do you think now about creating opportunities for women, you know, at Match, ensuring that women who may not have yet the internal grit and fortitude and pretty unshakable confidence that you clearly have had throughout your life can come to believe in themselves and can prove to themselves, as well as, of course, to their colleagues and to you, what they can do?
One of the things I feel really proud about what Mandy and I accomplished, at least at Match, Mandy Ginsberg, who was the CEO of Match Group before me, when we started here about 15 years ago, we were the only two women in leadership positions. And today, I think 38% of our VP and above positions are women. And a lot of that comes from people seeing you doing the things that you do, talking about all the challenges that you have to face. We were both young moms at the time when we started, and we were very comfortable talking about having to run to the doctor's office or having to get up in the middle of a meeting and to go pick up the kid from school because they were sick or what have you. And that made other women, I think, more comfortable bringing their entire lives to work versus compartmentalizing work in home. We found we were able to attract more women and we were able to close more women in the interview process. And some of that is what has led to, you know, Match Group in general being a company that has been much more welcoming and comfortable for women to work at. Not to mention we've had two CEOs in a row who are women.
Yes, it certainly matters. It matters because, Char, there are still so few women CEOs sitting atop big companies. Do you feel
any pressure by being one of the few women CEOs of a company of Match's size in the United States?
You know, I was thinking about this. The first woman CEO of a Fortune 500 company was Katherine Graham. And last year, in 2021, there are only 41 women who are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies.
So like not even one per year in the interim.
And so that's 8%, right? So any which way you look at it, it's single-digit percentage of women that are at the top. What gives me a little bit of hope and comfort, though, is just as college degrees, when women started going to college and there was a big acceleration of college degrees among women, first came education, then came other fields like medicine is one where nobody questions the presence of women there. I do think both technology, which is very underrepresented by women, and also business leadership is hopefully going to be one that gets accelerated much faster over the next decade. Because I do see a lot more women in mid and senior management positions who are sort of a few years from getting there, I think.
And hopefully we will regain all the progress that we did lose over the last couple of years of COVID, where we know millions of women at every tranche of leadership and across, you know, a multitude of professions left because they couldn't manage being a parent and a professional. How do you think about Match supporting the many thousands of people who work at the company over these still uncertain times?
We are lucky that we have a business where we can actually work 100% remote, which is what we've been doing for most of the last couple of years. But that hasn't been easy for women who have to juggle the childcare and all the dozens of things that they have to take care of. But even going forward, one of the things that I am worried about and starting to think about how to address is, as this sort of hybrid remote work becomes the norm, we all know, at least in our industry, nobody's coming back to a 9-to-5, 5 days a week sort of schedule anymore. So whatever form that takes, I do think women are going to over-index in terms of being more remote. And what does that do by way of mentorship, by way of opportunities? It is challenging to build relationships when you're not face-to-face and in-person and having all of those sidebar conversations, which is very difficult to do on Zoom. And what sort of unconscious or subconscious biases will that create? And how are we going to measure it once this becomes the norm in some way? So it is definitely an area for all of us to be thinking about and how we're going to solve it.
I share your concern that as long as we do exist in sort of uncertain hybrid dynamics, women will continue to be disadvantaged. And so I do think as much certainty that can be built in so that women can plan our lives and the totality of our lives, I do believe will matter a great deal. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
You know, we talked about how hard it is to build working relationships remotely. It's also hard to build romantic relationships remotely. and you became CEO of Match like right before COVID-19 exploded. Can you talk about what you saw among Match users that I think people might be surprised to hear?
Our business took a real hit in the first few weeks when this COVID thing was just starting around the second week of March. Everything from activity and usage to propensity to pay, all of it took a hit. But then, and of course, it was a big scramble to try to figure out what do we have to change? Everything from our marketing creatives, right? We have people going out to restaurants on dates that didn't seem like the right message to be airing at the time. We had to rejigger our entire product roadmap. We knew, okay, if people are not going to be able to meet in person, what are they going to do? There was a part of me that was excited about this because I always thought video was such a great tool to sort of bridge the disconnect that happens between those online conversations and the first time you meet someone in real life. And I always thought it's such a great half date tool, if you will. And
a prologue maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And I've been trying to experiment with video since 2011 and it never took off, but it felt like this was it. This was the moment for video. And fortunately for us, about middle to end of April, things started looking better. People were coming to our platforms in larger numbers. The surprising thing that happened was women on our platforms were more engaged, were messaging more, were talking for longer than we've ever seen before.
And what do you make of that, Char?
So I have two hypotheses on it. One, women, you know, we all need human connection and women need it more. We need to be able to talk it out, empathize with people. People in the U.S. were reaching out to people in Italy because that was the first country that had been heavily hit. So it wasn't just about the romantic intent necessarily. People truly wanted and were craving for this human connection. And we jokingly also said men are spending time playing video games and women are on our platforms trying to make human connections. But I really do think that was what drove a surge in activity on our platforms. And by summer, we were in much better shape, having transformed all of our product, marketing strategy and plans.
And you increased revenue.
The business has done pretty well. We just announced our earnings. We had 25% increase in our revenue.
It's really remarkable, Char. I think one of the things that has always impressed me about you is just as you were reflecting that you don't stop being a mom, you know, when you walk into your office or onto a Zoom screen these days, you don't check your humanity either, you know, as a leader. You are so fully yourself and you have used your platform to talk about issues that you think are really important to you as a woman, really important to you as a person. You know, and I'm thinking particularly about the horrifically restrictive, you know, new laws in Texas as relates to abortion care and the really just horrific reality of violence against women in every country, including here in the United States. And so just you want to know why it is so important for you to be your full self and why it is so important for you to take a stand on issues that clearly matter to you and you believe should matter to all of us.
One of the things I've realized is trying to not be your full authentic self is kind of stressful. You know, it's stressful to know what to bring and what not do, how to compartmentalize things. Never been very good at that. So this is who I am in all facets of life. In terms of some of these issues, we are a social product. We bring people together for this very important and existential need that we all have, that of love, relationships, and human connection. But it's not always great, and it is absolutely our responsibility, both as a company as well as leaders of the company, to make sure we are leading the way of making this new world online a world, a safer place for the future generation. You know, I think about it 10 years ago, we weren't on these digital platforms. It's just been a decade since so much of our lives has moved online. But for our kids, they are digital native. This is the world they know, and they're going to spend more and more parts of their life on these platforms. And for us as human beings, we've spent hundreds and hundreds of years trying to figure out what is the proper code of conduct and rules of behavior and laws and law enforcement of interpersonal connection in the real world. And obviously, none of us know how to navigate this well in this digital world, whether it is how anonymous should we be, what are the laws, and who is responsible for enforcing these laws. And so there's a lot of things we have to figure out, I think. And I always say it is going to take the trifecta of regulators, technology platform leaders, as well as all of us, society in general, to figure out what is it that we want from these platforms. Because safety and privacy can sometimes be at odds, because you need more of your information out there so people can make the platform safer, but then, you know, you do lose some of your privacy. So there's a host of complicated, difficult questions we have to collectively figure out. And I do think it is not just my responsibility, but our collective responsibility to figure that out. In terms of sort of social issues that are somewhat unrelated to the business itself, that's a trickier ground. And for the Texas laws, the stance I took, that was a personal thing for me, because somebody asked me for comment, and I just, in good faith, couldn't say no comment, because I felt passionately that we cannot, after making all of this progress, we can't go back. This is not the right thing. And I did get a lot of feedback about this is not a place for a CEO to be making comments on. And I get it. I understand that. But it's just something I felt really passionately about, and I couldn't keep quiet.
Well, I've never understood. Well, I mean, I do understand it's power protecting itself. But from a moral perspective, I've never understood the stance that business leaders shouldn't have opinions or perspectives on anything outside of their narrowly defined business, because of course things like voting rights impact business. Of course things like reproductive choice impact your business, if only because it impacts the people who you're employing, but that should matter. And so certainly it matters to me that you are modeling a different type of CEO than often what we, you know, have seen even in more recent times.
Taking a quick break. Stay with us.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Talked about how you think of supporting opportunities for women at kind of a holistic company level. I am curious, though, what advice you give to women who are engineers or maybe not engineers, but who want to become competent, qualified, and excellent leaders. And when people come and ask you for advice, what do you say to them?
Yeah, you know, for women or anybody who is trying to break into a world where there are not many of them, they're underrepresented, you sort of have this initial hurdle of getting people to look past and see past the very obvious difference that they see, right? We all have, we're humans, we have patterns, we have stereotypes in our brains about who should or should not be in certain positions or roles or jobs. And we act on that. And for someone who looks different and sounds different, they have to get past it. So one of the big advice I have, not just for people who are trying to break through, but it's hopefully helpful to everyone, is instead of focusing a lot of energy on trying to figure out how to overcome your weaknesses, spend the extra amount of energy in finding out what your particular strength or superpower is and work on enhancing it, because that is what gives you the advantage and the edge, and it makes you stand out and have people look past the fact that you're a woman or a woman of color or whatever it is, and focus on this other thing that's relevant to the business. Early on, I realized my superpower in some ways is memory. I have a very good memory, and I can retain and sort of extract random bits of facts and data and numbers. And it gave me a real advantage when I was in groups. I would remember things we've tried before. I'd be able to get patterns and come up with solutions more quickly. And I realized that's what gave me the edge and the advantage, and had people sort of sit up and notice this particular thing that I brought. And so I decided, okay, this is going to be a thing that I'm going to work very hard on preserving and sharpening. And so it's been well over a decade that I've never taken notes, ever. So I don't write anything down. I force myself to remember everything and retrieve it from memory, which keeps me sort of sharper on that front.
Wow, Char, I thought I had a pretty good memory, but I write things down to help groove it into my memory. I think I now need to practice, I guess, being a more active listener and mental cataloger. That's just extraordinary. We spoke earlier about kind of the statistic that we still haven't broken 10% of Fortune 500 CEOs being women. Is it that statistic, or is there another statistic that particularly empowers you or maybe enrages / inspires you to keep doing what you're doing, but also to keep supporting other women in business?
The biggest one for me is actually girls in computer science and technology. In the 70s, as more and more women started going to college and getting degrees, every degree from life sciences, business, law, computer science was going up. And most of the other fields except computer science edged up very close to that 40, 45, 50% by early 80s. In 1984, the percentage of college graduates that were computer science degrees that were girls was around 37%, I think. So, but then it started dropping, and it fell all the way to 18 to 20%. And it's been in that zone for a long time. And I mean, there's probably many reasons, but the fundamental reason for that particular inflection point in 1984 is the popularity of PCs, which were initially introduced for video gaming. And they were mostly used by boys. Parents bought them for their sons. And they obviously, by the time they got to college, had a real advantage and head start in programming and computers in general. And girls found themselves falling behind and hence more insecure. And then this led to this whole social programming of girls are not good in computer science. And it's now led to this place where only about 20% of computer science graduates in the US are girls. And here we are, much of our lives, almost every part of our life is now dominated by technology and computer science. And we have still a very small percentage of women coming into this field. People keep complaining about not having tech leaders who are women, but that's the reason. We've had 2 decades of underrepresentation in this field. And I'm hoping, I am seeing anecdotal evidence that more and more girls are getting interested in this area. I keep telling young girls, teenagers in particular, I don't understand why you wouldn't do it. It has the most flexibility. You can join any industry you want. It is one of the highest paid jobs you will get. It is such a fantastic job for girls. And it actually plays to the web thinking we naturally always do. You know, we're always doing this if then else in our heads all the time, and we're very good at it. And my real hope is that trend changes and we are much more normalized, because at the end of the day, we do want women to be influencing these technologies of the future.
Especially as we navigate all the questions that you spoke about earlier for how we think about privacy and safety, especially for women. Well, sure, you'll be happy to know my parents actually gave me a computer. Well, Santa gave me a computer in 1987. Math Games and Carmen Sandiego were my great passions as a child on my computer. And I'm so thankful that they did bring technology into my life when I was quite little. And I'm very grateful for your time today, Shar. Thank you so much for the conversation. And thanks for making me your first podcast.
It was my pleasure, Chelsea. It was so fun.
You can find Shar Dubey on Twitter at @_ShardubeY. In Fact is brought to you by iHeartRadio. We are produced by a mighty group of women and one amazing man. Erica Goodmanson, Marit Haar, Sarah Horowitz, Jessamyn Molly, and Justin Wright. With help from Lindsay Hoffman, Barry Lurie, Joy Sakubin, Julie Subrin, Mike Taylor, and Emily Young. Original music is by Justin Wright. If you like this episode of In Fact, please make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and tell your family and friends to do the same. If you really want to help us out, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.